The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is Joe Healy. We will be joined a little bit later in the show by Lehigh right-hander Mason Black, a prominent prospect in the 2021 draft. So we're excited to talk with Mason about summer ball, about Lehigh, about the draft, a little bit of everything. It's a really good interview. So definitely look forward to that in the next few minutes. But we're very happy you tuned in to the Baseball America College Podcast, presented by Rapsodo. Rapsodo has become the industry standard in player performance data. Coaches use Rapsodo data as a measuring stick for player development and evaluation. The Rapsodo National Player Database is a free service that allows you to see how you stack up against your peers and provides a pathway to get discovered by scouts. So again, this is the Baseball America College Podcast presented by Rapsodo. Joe, we're excited to be here talking about some college baseball in late August. It's an interesting time in college athletics, in just college stuff in general, as more schools get back to classes, be they online or not. But it's we have reached the end of the summer, and we're going to do some summer college ball wrap up here on the show today.
We can also, while we're at it, do some summer pestilence wrap up. I'm not someone who's overly wigged out by bugs. Like, I'm not so bothered by bugs. I grew up on the Gulf Coast. Bugs are a part of life there, especially the skeeters, you know, that are like the size of rats, mice, you know. But I will say, in moving here, there has been one exception to that rule where the first time I saw one, it kind of freaked me out a little bit. Teddy, I'm sure you've experienced these. How do you feel about house centipedes?
Yeah, not great. I definitely did not know. I mean, like, it was not something I experienced before I moved to North Carolina. But yeah, they may make an appearance in your bathroom, and it's, I don't mind bugs that much, but anything with that many legs becomes sketchy to me, I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you. The thing, they really vary in size too. Like, there's some that are like really teeny tiny, and there's some that are like 4 inches long. And the first time I saw one, it was probably later in the spring, because they really start to come around when it's been wet. You know, and we've had a lot of rain here this summer. So the first time I saw one kind of like moving across, it was actually, I suspect it came in like through like the chimney area, and it's moving across the floor. And I'm a pretty like calm and collected person just in general. I'm also someone who, you know, I don't typically use foul language that often, to be honest with you. But when I saw this thing crawling, I yelled in my home, "What the bleep is that?" Because I had no idea what this thing was. And that was my first experience with a house centipede. And I feel like it's like the worst word that could come after house. You know, it's like house cat, house warming, you know, House Hunters International. Like, house and then centipede should not be the second word there, because that implies that, like, we call these house centipedes because they get in your house. And like, I don't like that. And like I said, I'm used to the cockroaches that like are a foot long growing up in Texas. I'm used to the mosquitoes and the different beetles, June bugs, all that kind of stuff. It's whatever to me. I don't enjoy it, but like you deal with the bugs. You either squish them or you lead them outside, whatever you want to do. But those there's something about those house centipedes. I think it's all the legs. I think you're right. I think it's all the legs. Those really kind of wig me out. The other ones I see outside a lot are these kind of centipedes that have like shiny black shells and like yellow legs.
Those are millipedes.
Pardon me. Oh my goodness. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to be disrespectful to them, but yes, those millipedes kind of, now those haven't gotten in the house yet, knock on wood, but I see those outside all the time, especially when it's wet outside. But those are kind of fascinating to watch because I don't know, I don't feel threatened by them because they're not in my home. But this has definitely been the summer of Joe discovering local bugs here in North Carolina, and the house centipede is number one on my list of things that I did not anticipate having to deal with and am not happy about having to deal with, but hey, that's life.
Yeah, those things move fast, and like that's a problem
yeah.
with them. The millipede, which is yes. more of a caterpillar, slightly faster than a caterpillar.
Yeah, these house centipedes, that thing about them too, like you get, especially if they're in like a weird spot, like if they're like kind of on like a uneven part of the ground or the wall, or like kind of up on a ledge a little bit, like you kind of get one crack at them. Like if you're trying to, and I'm the type of person, I would rather lead a bug outside. Like I do not like squishing bugs because I just, you know, feels like the kind thing to do to just kind of let nature be nature. But sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And sometimes like these things are quick. Like you get one really good crack at them typically. And if you miss, you miss. And then you're like, okay, well, where is it now? And you just got to kind of live with it. But a summer of discovery, if you will, on the pestilence front.
It's a challenging summer for numerous aspects here in 2020. we got the pandemic and we got bugs. Although I suppose the bugs are around most summers, but regardless, they are here, and we are coming to colder times though, and with that comes a whole different set of worries around the country, but. In the meantime, we're going to take a shot at kind of wrapping up summer ball here on the podcast today. Like I mentioned, Mason Black will join us. He pitched in the South Florida Collegiate League, where he was Pitcher of the Year. That comes after a summer where he was he started the Cape Cod League All-Star Game a year ago as after his freshman season at Lehigh. So summer ball star Mason Black is... I guess the way I'm going to refer to him now. but we've got some stuff on the website over the last week or so that, helps wrap up summer ball as well. I put together a list of kind of the biggest summer leagues with their champions and some standout performers. And normally we would do, top prospects from the Cape Cod League and the collegiate national team and, whatever other leagues are out there. We would oftentimes, have top prospects from there as well. We're not doing that this year. First of all, there was no Cape, there was no CNT, but, even for these other leagues, just with the way that everything went in terms of, how they got scouted and, how many games they played and, all the rest of it, it's just very difficult to put together a real prospect list, but we are going to have in the magazine and online, some updated reports on some of the top players from around the country this summer that Joe's been working on. So I would encourage you to check those out over at the website or the magazine, which we just sent to press. So hopefully for subscribers, they will be getting that soon in their mailboxes. And lots of good stuff. There were a lot of good players playing out there this summer, as we've detailed before. They were just very scattered. So kind of hard to bring them all together, but we're doing our best to do so for you guys. Joe and I will talk more about some of this summer stuff here in a little bit. But first, let's bring in Mason Black, who, like I mentioned, summer ball star Mason Black here to join us on the podcast, coming off of a very impressive summer in the South Florida Collegiate League and looking forward to a very important year and the potential of being a pretty high draft pick next June. Today on the Baseball America College podcast, we are very excited to be joined by Lehigh right-hander Mason Black. Mason is one of the top draft prospects in the 2021 draft. He's a rising junior, or I suppose redshirt sophomore is how we will be referring to them this year, at Lehigh. And he's coming off of an impressive summer in the South Florida Collegiate League, where he won Pitcher of the Year honors. And that's after a summer the year before in the Cape Cod League, when he started the All-Star game. So, you know, Mason, really high end talent, and we're excited to talk with you today. And let's just start with this summer. You know, after such a strange spring season in that it got canceled in March, just what was it like to be able to get back out on the mound and pitch?
Yeah, thank you first of all for having me on this podcast. It's an honor to be here, and thank you for the intro. But also, it was just going into this summer was a little bit more different of a feel than it was prior going up into Cape Cod. But it just was, once our season got shut down and I was able to go home and kind of reset, hit the reset on the body, shut down from throwing for a couple weeks, then you start getting anxious once school is over. You don't really have too much to do. So I took that opportunity to go ahead and just throw some reps out of bullpen, start building up stamina. And then I was lucky enough to go down into the South Florida League. And it was just a very exciting time. And obviously you miss playing in games. So it was just exciting to go down there, get to meet some new faces and get back out on the field. I know a lot of guys are missing that.
We're headed back to the Cape until it got canceled. Then how did that opportunity come about to go to South Florida, and kind of what did you make of the experience once you got down there?
It was very spur of the moment, actually. I was initially going to pitch in our local league out of Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is where I'm from. And it was just put on by my former travel team, and we had a lot of local talent in the area. So I was going to play there. However, I reached out to one of my Lehigh teammates who was going down into the South Florida League, who put me in contact with Vince Farfaglia, the owner and commissioner of Boca Blazers and the league in general. And he was able to offer me a roster spot on the Boca Raton Blazers. And that was kind of the story, that I got in there probably the Friday, I think, before rosters had to be finalized. So I was very blessed and very lucky to get that opportunity. And then just as far as the summer experience goes, it was so much fun. I just have to say, brought back almost a sense of normalcy to just my life overall. Obviously, things are a lot different in Pennsylvania than in Florida. However, it was so nice just to get down there and get back out on the field, like I had mentioned prior, and get back in the weight room and just kind of have that sense of baseball to kind of tie you in and keep you occupied.
So you certainly took advantage of the opportunity this summer. As Teddy alluded to, you were named the Pitcher of the Year in the league, and the stats are really eye-popping. What worked for you this summer? How did you feel? What do you think was the key to you having the level of success that you did?
I was able to, during quarantine, as I mentioned before, I was able to work on Rap Soto and kind of get back with one of my pitching coaches back home, and John Kranick. He was with the Pirates organization for a little bit. His brother plays with the Pirates as well, one of my best friends. But just in working with him, and we tried to redesign a slider and really just work on that. So I had the opportunity to practice with that in game when I went down there this summer. And I think that was a lot of the key to my success, as well as just going back out there, almost like you have something to prove. It was a lot of fun. And then also I worked on some stuff in shortening up my arm action, because that's what we felt. My coaches here, as well as back over the summer, felt that that was probably the best thing for me to do with my off speed. So it was a big, big work in progress this summer.
You were up to 98 with the fastball as well, which is up from what I had heard last summer. Is adding velo something you were also working on?
I just think velo was something that kind of came, I would say, just naturally through like the gym and everything. Just getting back in the gym down there, getting in the weight room again, really helped me out. And then also the warm weather, who doesn't love to pitch in warm weather? That also helped a ton. So I was just, and obviously like when you have guys behind the home plate with radar guns, you kind of want to give them something to stay for. So I think a little bit of adrenaline really tied into that as well.
this will be this. I mean, this is the second summer where you really shined. I, you know, heard a lot about you last summer when you were on the Cape. Is there something specific about the summer ball setting that suits you? I mean, you mentioned the warm weather. That's got to be kind of nice. And given that you're playing your spring in Pennsylvania, that's obviously not the case there. So is there something else to it that, that really allows you to shine that way in summer ball?
I'm not sure, actually. It's just more of the environment, I think. Just having like 25 other guys that you don't know, and you have to go out there and really just like earn your keep. And it was a lot different last summer on Cape Cod because I was a temporary player. So like if I didn't perform, I was getting booted from the team. And I know it sounds kind of harsh to say, but that's the reality of it when you're a temp. And just the summer ball experience, it's a lot easier to throw to guys with wood bats as well. That's a big confidence boost. And then it's almost like you're hitting your stride when you get into summer ball. And it's been a lot of fun. And I was lucky, like you said, to have the success I did.
What when you look back on the summer, kind of what were the highlights or what are you going to remember the most about the summer ball?
I'm definitely going to remember the people. People will make or break a summer ball season, I'd say. And I say it all the time with my host family up on Cape Cod, and I'll say it again this summer. Just like being around that type of people and in the environment that they really make you feel welcomed and just kind of are rooting for you. Just so it helps so much. It helps you stay comfortable and really perform at your best. Definitely going to remember that, as well as just like the baseball moments. We played during the biggest pandemic, one of the biggest switch ups in our whole entire life. And it's just, it'll be an awesome story saying like, hey, I played through that. And South Florida League really helped us kind of stay safe and go about our business in a safe way.
So obviously, with you going to school at Lehigh, Lehigh education is no joke. You know, that's obviously pretty rigorous. And with the semester starting up here soon, you're going to get back at it. And you major in bioengineering. And I'm kind of curious how you landed on that as the major you wanted to pursue. And then obviously, perhaps after you finish your career in baseball, hopefully, I mean, what were the type of things that you would like to do with that? What interests you about that field?
That was actually one of the – that's been a question I've gotten a lot recently. But just having that – I wanted to go into – initially when I got into – we're going through high school, I wanted to go into medical school after college. And I didn't want to do the stereotypical biology degree where you just kind of go to class and just have a couple labs. And I just didn't really feel that that would be – the way I would want to go about doing college. I like math. I'm kind of a nerd on that side of things. So that was a pretty easy choice for me to pick bioengineering. I'm in biopharmaceutical and still pre-med now, which has been really exciting, just kind of seeing that side of things and learning about things, especially during this pandemic. I nerd out a little bit about some of the vaccination stuff because that's more tailored to my field. So it's just something that I really felt was me and I could fall in love with. And then just as opposed to, or just getting out of baseball, one of the things that I really wanted to do was kind of focus on drug development or go to medical school would be an option as well.
How hard is that to balance? You know, in the spring, you're obviously on the road a lot. There's a lot of practice no matter what time of year we're talking about. How difficult is it to balance, you know, your classes with your athletics?
I actually, a lot of people ask me that as well. And it's just, it almost helps being a student athlete because you know that if you're not at the field, you're not working on baseball or lifting or doing something along those lines. You can't be messing around. Like, it helps with your time management, and you just have to go out there and get your work done from the academic side when you're not doing your athletic side of things.
So we come to the part of the show where Teddy and I are going to do a little bit of a close reading of Mason Black's bio on the Lehigh side here. And one of the things that caught our eye, and he might know where we're going with this, is his favorite thing about Lehigh is the campus. All the steps make your legs look great. Mason, do you get a lot of compliments on your legs? Is this something that has been tested? Is it you observing others? I mean, what's the deal there? Explain to us why this is your favorite thing about Lehigh.
Well, I just like to make a joke of it because a lot of people like to complain about our campus and how it's literally on the side of a mountain here. So keep your legs conditioned. I like to let the calves eat a little bit here and wear some flip-flops or wear some like higher shorts around campus just because why not?
Does that make leg day easier or harder?
Oh, that makes, knowing that you have to walk up and down this mountain makes leg day a lot harder, but you know, you wouldn't want it any other way, I guess. There's 34 other guys that are suffering with you. So I guess you just have to keep that in perspective.
You also mentioned there that your favorite food is burritos. So let's break down this ideal burrito. What is going into your burrito?
There are different types of burritos, that's for sure. I am a big breakfast burrito guy. So ideal breakfast burrito. My mom owns a restaurant back home, actually. And I gotta say, her breakfast burritos are the greatest things ever. It's called Cachetti's. But they put the sausage, breakfast sausage in there, bacon, eggs, cheese. I love avocado, so I'll mix some of that in. And then also like home fries and spinach in there. And then if I'm going to a lunch burrito or a dinner burrito, it's gotta be chicken. Obviously have to have guacamole in there, as well as some rice, black beans, big corn guy, as well as some hot salsa and sour cream.
I appreciate the effort you put into really breaking down. That's exactly the kind of answer we were looking for on this podcast. It's a nice breakdown of the burrito situation. Quick follow-up there before I get to my next question. You shouted it out briefly, but your mom owns a restaurant back home. Let's shout it out. The name of the restaurant, the type of food they're doing there, the setting, the ambiance. Give us a little rundown of mom's restaurant.
Mom's restaurant's the best. So it's a breakfast and lunch place. It's called Cachetti's, and it's located in Peckville, Pennsylvania. It's right outside of Scranton. And they have it going right there. Honestly, right now it's been a little bit of a switch up with the whole pandemic going on. So they're just doing outdoor seating and like walk up window kind of stuff. But they breakfast lunch place, like I mentioned, real homey environment. I love it. And kind of just sums up the area I'm from, where everyone's just like small town vibe, and it's a little bit smaller, and I love it.
So did you like grow up working in the restaurant? Is that something that you've had to, you know, you've grown up with a lot, or is that a separate thing? Like you didn't have to help out there?
I definitely grew up in the restaurant, but I wouldn't say that's from a working standpoint. That's more from an eating standpoint. And one of the things I think my mom could agree on this is that she would not want me working there with her. I know my little cousin works there right now just to kind of make some money during her time and help out. But I doubt my mom would want me working there. I think we see enough of each other, and she would go crazy if she had to stay around me that long.
There's one more thing on the bio here I wanted to go over, and that is your favorite place on campus is the secret room in Linderman Library. What on earth is that?
That was something that my teammates and I found when we were freshmen, and it's this back room in Linderman. I guess it's not really a secret, but we thought it was the coolest thing in the world, because the first semester of school, we were able to go into there and just be all baseball guys in there. And no one else kind of seemed to test us. And they would just like walk in, see who's there, and then just leave. So we started to call it the secret room because not too many people knew about it.
All right, let's talk about the 2021 Mountain Hawks, since we're now talking about your teammates. You have the makings of a really great pitching staff next year. You know yourself, of course, Luke Rettig, and you mentioned, you know, though not by name, Matt Swanson kind of was down in the South Florida League with you, and he had a nice summer as well. What's the dynamic of that pitching staff, and how much do you guys feed off of each other?
We feed off of each other an enormous amount. It's always so fun when we get back on campus like we are right now, where we can almost see each other's progress. It was a little different this summer because we were able to see each other's progress, which really just raises our bar, in which we're all competing for essentially the number one spot on our team. And it's a lot of fun just having that environment and having the younger guys feed off of that sort of environment that we try to strive to create.
The Patriot League is, being a smaller league like it is, I think one of the things about it is that it kind of lends itself to being really competitive, especially when you have a situation where you know what Navy and Army are going to bring to the table. You guys are just as talented there. What do you think is the key for your team as a whole to be the team that comes out on top and is actually finally able to unseat Navy, where it's been 5 or 6 years now where they've been running the league?
Yeah, there's a couple keys, I would say. Obviously, we have this big repertoire of pitching that we just have to go out and really perform and hold our team in games. Being in the Patriot League, you have the doubleheader on Saturday, And then sometimes a doubleheader on Sunday where the first game is a one inning or a seven inning game. And we really just, those games are always about an hour and a half in length. So it's just a, it's a real grind to kind of put together a run off of the other team's ace. So I think just kind of manufacturing runs any way we could, as well as just pitching how we should really be keys for us. I know it's, it sounds a little bit bland of an answer, but honestly, that's how I think it is.
You talked a lot about what you were working on this spring during the shutdown. Now what's kind of your goals for the fall coming off of what you were able to do in the spring and summer? What's the next step in that development for you?
I would say the next step is, I'm obviously not where I want to be with my arm path. I would like that to be a lot shorter just to kind of save my body on some stress and be able to go later into games. So I think that's a big focus, as well as kind of refining the slider that I developed over the summer, and it seemed to get better during the summer. I don't think it's anywhere near where it should be or could be, really. So I think that's going to be a big focus, as well as just kind of pitch mix is going to be a bigger thing now that I have that pitch. It's going to be seeing what works best against these guys, against X, Y, or Z player, and just kind of that mix so that I have almost a 1-2 combo where I can go with fastball in, might it be, and then a changeup, just so I can really steal back two strikes if I'm ever down on the count.
You're coming into a big year, not just for Lehigh, of course, though this, you know, this group, when you guys look at yourselves on the mound, I'm sure you imagine that you can accomplish big things in the spring, but also for yourself. There's draft buzz already. I guess I'm responsible for some of that. But when you look at all of that, you know, how do you go about, you know, this year? And are you trying to tune out the draft talk? Is that something you really want to push to the back or embrace? Or how are you just approaching what could be a pretty big year for you and Lehigh?
It's always been about just kind of keeping a mellow mindset with things and not thinking too much about the draft talk. Like, it's awesome always seeing your name on that kind of stuff. It's really cool, great for our program as well. But in the end, it's still at right around 9 months away for the draft, so you can't let yourself get a big head or get too far ahead of yourself. And I think that's something that I've been working on a lot, and just kind of my teammates here have been helping me as well with that, and just kind of making me feel comfortable, like I don't have to go out and be anything more than who I am.
Awesome. Well, Mason, we really appreciate you taking the time for us today to join us here on the Baseball America College podcast. It's great to talk to you, and we're going to look forward to seeing you pitch this spring with Lehigh.
Likewise. Thank you guys for having me as well. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you again to Lehigh right-hander Mason Black for joining us here on the Baseball America College podcast. Joe, that's back-to-back interviews with some pretty smart guys. Steve Beezer, math teacher, was on last week, and here we have Mason Black, who's, you know, lining up the idea of going to med school if baseball doesn't work out. So we've got the brains coming through on the podcast here in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, no kidding. And that was not done intentionally, but it's funny how that worked out. It kind of reminds me of when I was in high school, and I think like a lot of kids who are that age and were coming up at that time, like you listen to like the Jim Rome show, who was a big deal at that time, and he would have these streaks where he would talk to someone named Rex for like 20 days in a row, and it would start off as an accident, and then he would just be a bit. Like, I feel like this is an opportunity for us to do a bit here where we just have the theme of like math, for example, because there is the link there, because Mason Black did say that he is kind of a nerd when it comes to the math part, which is part of why he went with the engineering focus as just opposed to the straight up biology focus. So that was interesting. So there is the link there that we could just turn this into a bit where we find all of the math majors in college baseball and just kind of stack them one after the other after the other.
At some point, we just interviewed the entirety of like Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech's rosters.
Right. We just go for all the engineering schools like Purdue, come on down. Yeah.
Well, you know, Mason, you know, as interesting as the off-field stuff was, and believe us, listeners, we'll get to that. In terms of the on-field stuff, just a very impressive what he's been able to do. He had some, you know, he was a bit of a known quantity in high school, But he wasn't that big of a deal as a prospect. But you know, Lehigh was very excited to get him and Luke Rettig in the same recruiting class a few years ago. And I talked with Sean Leary about that at the time. And he was very excited about what they could be and where they could take the program. And, you know, we're still, you know, kind of waiting. You know, unfortunately, they got robbed of this year along with everyone else. You know, their freshman year, Mason was injured for the first half of the season, I would say. And, you know, it's their freshman year anyway. But I'll be very interested to see if they are able to kind of make a significant jump in 2021 as a program. But, you know, in terms of development, you know, just personal development, you know, Mason Black has positioned himself to a point where, you know, you're looking at certainly a potential top five round pick, probably more like a top three round pick. And, you know, if he actually, you know, if he's able to pitch a full season next year, showing the same kind of stuff he showed this summer in South Florida, I mentioned getting up to 98 and more consistently pitching in the mid 90s, like he has potential to go, you know, very high in the draft. And, you know, that's really exciting for Lehigh. That's exciting for the Patriot League, maybe not as exciting for opposing hitters in the Patriot League, but, you know, that's a game changing kind of talent for Lehigh as they go into 2021.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Lehigh too to kind of become the type of program that has these types of arms that people probably remember Levi Stout a couple of years ago, a third round pick in 2019, Mason Black coming up right behind him, and then to a larger degree that the Patriot League just really becoming this pitching league. And I think it has always had that a little bit. It's always been known as more of a pitching league versus an offensive league. And there are a lot of reasons for that, some of which are just, you know, sometimes the cold weather in these smaller leagues, you typically don't get the, you know, super athletic offensive minded guy, you know, who turns into like a, just kind of one of those freak athletes who can do it all offensively. Those players aren't growing on trees in a lot of places these programs are recruiting. That's part of it. But you look at the guys that, you know, Army's had guys in recent years, Navy certainly, when you talk about Noah Song most notably, but also guys like Luke Gillingham, and Navy's just had incredible staffs from top to bottom. And now Lehigh's had a couple of guys back-to-back who are big-time prospects. And so clearly Sean Leary and his staff are doing something right in terms of bringing those guys in. But Black just kind of fits into what this league and what this program has been as of late. And I am genuinely excited as I ask him about how interesting the Patriot League has become. And I know that is a little bit of my brand to be interested in the low major leagues, but I don't think that's just me being me here. I think there is some legitimate interest in what the Patriot League is becoming, where it used to be one of these leagues where teams would kind of take their turn. You know, Bucknell was the clear team to watch, and they would break through, and then Lehigh would break through, and Army and Navy were certainly still in the mix. And now it really is getting to the point, especially with what Navy has done, and it certainly looks like Army is headed that direction with what they've done the last couple of years, where you can kind of expect a certain level of quality from those two programs. And Lehigh, I think, is getting there as well. Their talent is really, really good. And so I think the Patriot League, by and large, I think is more talented across the board and is more interesting as a league across the board. Now, obviously that doesn't change much in terms of, you know, at large prospects or anything like that, but just from a talent standpoint and from an entertainment standpoint, watching this league, I think things are trending really, really well for the Patriot League as a whole.
Yeah, I find it to be very interesting. Army and Navy are a big part of that, obviously. And they have just a certain amount of interest from the casual observer, you know, just because of what they are. But yeah, the, you know, Holy Cross, you know, we'll put together a team. Bucknell has put together impressive teams. Now you have Lehigh, and you know, we'll see what Lafayette can do as you know, they underwent, you know, a coaching change, you know, planned coaching change. You know, so it's an interesting league. And it's a league where there's good baseball, and I really love following it. And I just think there's a lot to be said for those programs up there. And, you know, it's not easy. You're balancing really, really high-end academics against baseball and also against, you know, unforgiving weather in the Northeast. So it's not easy. And then as Mason, you know, mentioned, like they play this, I don't know if it's truly unique, but it's pretty close to unique format on their weekends, you know, with the double headers that they play and just what that does to the way they set up their staffs and have to set up their staffs. They have to, you really have four starters, not three starters, but their bullpens are maybe a little less important, especially if you have a true ace, because like Noah Saun threw a complete game every single time. He would just throw one of those 7-inning games and go CG. And then you have the full complement of your bullpen for other pitchers, you know, if they need it. So it's I really love it as a league. You know, if you're looking for a low major league to get into, you can definitely do worse than the drum and fife of the Patriot League. The way that he talked about the South Florida Collegiate League, like that was one of the leagues that had some really interesting talent down there, and you know, they were able to play through some, you know, adverse conditions. You know, the league is based more around Boca than it is Miami, and I'm not following South Florida trends in terms of the virus to know specifically where was the hotspot and where wasn't the hotspot. But you know, the fact that league was able to continue, and you know, they only had four positive tests all summer in the league, and you know, to do that in the environment that Florida was this summer, I think is a real credit to everyone involved in that league and all the players for doing a good job of staying safe and following the protocols while they were down there.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that is a good point, because the situation there for a lot of the summer was not great, and they did a good job of kind of keeping that on track. And I think that can be said truthfully. You know, I'll be honest, when we got into this summer, and granted, we were playing with a lot less inventory, you know, I would just say roughly, when you include the pop-up leagues that kind of came out of nowhere, like the Grand Park or the Honor the Game League, stuff like that, when you factor those in, we were probably looking at about 50% capacity where things normally are. And there were situations. I know that the Northwood League had to shut down a pod for a period of time. I know out here locally, the Wilson Tobbs and the Coastal Plain shut down about 2/3 of the way through their schedule. But for the most part, things went okay. Like, you know, there weren't a ton of mass shutdowns and or leagues that just had to completely abandon ship. And that was, I thought that was heartening that they were able to get through as much as they were able to get through. So I was pleasantly surprised in that way. And I'm thankful for it, because, and you know, we'll talk about some of this coming up here shortly, but I think it was a summer where we did get to see a lot of high end guys. And would we have liked to have seen, for example, Matt McClain play on the Cape or with Team USA, where we get to see him against the true, you know, see his true talent level shine through against guys who were on equal footing? Absolutely. Rather than the independent schedule Santa Barbara played and where he dominated. Like, absolutely. However, you know, I am thankful that we got to see some of those high end guys. I think it was also an opportunity to see some guys who maybe were given a little bit more of an opportunity than they otherwise would have had. So there are some guys I saw in the Coastal Plain who I think if the talent in that league had been a little more spread out versus, you know, High Point being so much more talented than the rest of the league just in the Northern Division, I think there's some guys who maybe would have gotten a little bit drowned out. Now, from a scouting perspective, it's a scout's job to still find those guys, so I don't doubt those guys would have existed. But just being able to kind of scrape box scores and stat sheets and be able to find little gems here and there that maybe we wouldn't have been able to see with the naked eye has been kind of nice. So there are some silver linings here, and I think one of them is just that I think there were the opportunities were pretty well spread out. And I think because a good portion of some of the top players decided to sit it out, and understandably so, and that's their prerogative to do that, we did get to see some players that maybe in a regular summer, we would be so focused on the Cape and Team USA and maybe a little bit of Coastal Plain, a little bit of Northwood, et cetera, that really we wouldn't have paid a ton of attention to. And now those are some names I think we're going to be paying closer attention to in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, once the Futures League was able to go and the Wild West League, they were able to go, given the Northeast and Pacific Northwest, respectively, you know, some decently high-end leagues. Pretty much every area of the country had a summer league going in it. And like, I know that there was a league in Washington, and I'm sure that there were other leagues in the Northeast beyond the Futures League, but you know, beyond just the purely local leagues, there were relatively prominent leagues pretty much in every part of the country, and that was definitely good to, you know, so that the players who did want to play were able to get out and play relatively locally. And you know, like Joe said, I mean, there were some places where there were problems, but for the most part, it seems like summer ball went off relatively well in the places that did continue to play. And there's a lot to be said for that. And, you know, as I was, you know, combing through the various leagues and, you know, looking at the performances, like, no, I mean, of course, in a lot of these leagues, you wish that they would have been able to play more games, because, you know, playing 20 games in the summer is not what we're used to. But, you know, aside from that, you know, and even given that, you know, given the circumstances, I don't know how much more we really could have asked for from summer ball this year. And I think that, you know, it's great that enough places were able to give it a go, and that they were able to go off pretty safely, and that the players that, you know, played were able to go out and get some at-bats, get some innings. And, you know, I'm sure they wished there was more, and it wasn't perfect, because of course, you know, I heard a lot that the pitchers were way ahead of the hitters for the first few weeks of the season, and defense, you know, suffered and all the rest of this. But, you know, this was still an opportunity to get back out on the diamond after, you know, missing 3 months of season this spring.
Yeah. And I think ultimately conversations I've had with summer ball coaches last few weeks have largely echoed just it was nice to be able to do this, give the players a place to play and kind of knock some rust off and get a little bit of normalcy in their lives and all of that. And I think that ultimately will be, it's nice to have some of these developmental stories or maybe some prospect names to watch moving forward to focus on. But really this kind of was just about, hey, let's get as many guys in the field as we can. And it seemed to go pretty well. And, you know, but, yeah, I think that's kind of, I don't think that's been lost on the people who are involved here either, with people running leagues and coaches, just how important it was to get a summer going and get it done and get out with folks healthy and getting their work in and getting something out of it. And that seems to be where we landed.
So you mentioned that there were some guys that came to, you know, more prominence because of what they were able to do this summer in this unique environment. Who are some of the guys that caught your eye the most or that most intrigued you when you were doing some of this reporting?
Yeah, I mean, there's some, so I won't spend a lot of time on some of the obvious guys. I mean, some of these are written up in the magazine and will be written up online, but the guys like Judd Fabian, the Florida State players who were on the Orlando Scorpions with Robbie Martin and Reese Albert, those guys are who they are. Leftwich and Mace were on that team. Matt McClain with the Santa Barbara Foresters. Those guys are basically, there was nothing there that we didn't already know, and there wasn't anything really out of the ordinary there. But there are some guys who I think are a little bit, perhaps a little further down, who I think are interesting. One of them here locally was Ethan Murray at Duke. You know, it was a guy when I talked to Mickey Willard, the coach of the High Toms, who, you know, he talked a lot about how impressed he was with Ethan Murray this summer and the really positive feedback that he was getting from the scouting community about Ethan Murray and just how solid his game is. How much of a competitor he is, the confidence that he's going to stick it at shortstop, which obviously is a big question mark with any college shortstop is their ability to kind of stick there. And some guys are a little more obvious in that way than others, but there was a lot of confidence that he is the guy, the type of guy who's going to be able to play that position defensively moving forward. So on a team full of guys that really stood out this summer, he was one that that Mickey went to immediately in terms of guys that were getting a lot of buzz in the scouting community beyond Ryan Cusick, of course, who we've talked about, we've covered him. So one of his teammates though, that really stood out, a name that a lot of people might not know is Hogan Windisch for UNC Greensboro, who really passes the eye test. First of all, he's a big, strong guy and looks the part. He's not somebody you have to convince is strong, but you can see it in the way he impacts the baseball. I saw him hit last weekend or the next to last weekend of the season, you know, just an opposite field bomb. It just looked easy. Ball really jumps off his bat. He's also a very, what I would call a very modern player in terms of he's the offense is definitely there. Mickey Willard described his bat speed as big league bat speed, and you could see it. But he's versatile defensively, and I don't know, you know, to my eyes, I don't really know that he looks like he's going to be necessarily a plus defender anywhere. You know, he played second base at UNC Greensboro. Maybe he plays a little third moving forward at UNC Greensboro. He played left field this summer because he was playing on a team with Ethan Murray, Michael Turconi, and Zach Geloff. He wasn't going to get very many reps on the infield, so he goes out to left field, and he did a good job out there. And I think he's passable in those places, and I think that's a feather in his cap, especially in baseball in 2020, where, you know, if you've got the bat, you're going to play as long as you can be passable at a few different places. And so he's not just a guy who can play first base, for example. He's got enough versatility where a team can really love the bat and then find a place to put him. But he really lit up the stat sheet this summer. Understanding, of course, this summer is wonky as far as stats go, but like, look, on a team with as much talent as he was playing on, the fact that he led the team in hitting at 447, led the team in home runs with six, and you know his OBP is almost 14, or his OPS, pardon me, is almost 1400. So like, all of that stuff is just very real. So he jumped on the scene big time. Another one in that same league is the Peninsula Pilots have a pitcher named Jacob Pilarski, who's had kind of a circuitous route to get where he is. You know, pitched at a junior college, then at a lower level. Now he's going to the Citadel, but he was up to 96 when I've seen him this summer, and I guess that was about as high as he got, according to the TrackMan data. But up to 96, just a nasty, nasty changeup that I wish he'd have thrown more of, to be honest. Like, I really like the changeup and two different breaking balls, which is not something you see at this level, especially at the mid-major and below level, guys with two legit breaking balls. There's a slider he throws more often and a more traditional 12-6 that he looked like he likes to really just kind of drop the 12-6 in the zone. That tended to be the way he was using it there. But, you know, at a place like the Citadel, that's really going to play. You know, a guy with a high 90s fastball, two breaking balls, and a nasty changeup. I know there was a lot of buzz in the scout section when he was out there. He was pitching against Ryan Cusick, and that helps because there were a lot of scouts there to see Cusick. So I think that probably did him some good. I also don't doubt that he was probably a guy who, given that he's a fifth-year senior, probably got a phone call or two from teams trying to maybe – I don't know that on the record or anything, but I just imagine a guy with that kind of stuff was getting some interest as a potential free agent sign this offseason. So that's another guy I saw in person that I really liked. A couple just quickly that I didn't see with my own eyes, but I've gotten, you know, that I've seen things out of or heard things on is one is Jace Young with the Santa Barbara Foresters. Matt McClain absolutely dominated, and Jace Young's numbers of Texas Tech were not far off. You know, hit 10 home runs.
It's Josh's summer. Younger brother.
Josh Young's younger brother, and he's a little bit different player. We didn't get to see a lot of him in 2020 because we didn't get to see a lot of anybody. He's a little bit smaller. You know, he's about 6 foot as opposed to, you know, 6'3", where Josh Young, 6'3", 6'4". But really hit the ball well this summer. Like I said, if you like what Matt McClain did statistically, you have to like what Jace Young did because his numbers were just as good or better in some cases. So he's a guy I'm interested to watch at Texas Tech moving forward. Another guy for the Orlando Scorpions team that was so loaded was David Litchfield, a reliever who pitches at UCF. You know, the stuff on him from what I've heard is not necessarily going to jump off when you watch him, but he's a high spin rate guy who, you know, pitched really well this summer. And that's a UCF staff we've talked about a little bit, UCF more generally. UCF's an interesting team. They've had a lot of kind of coming and going on their pitching staff, some transfers in, some transfers out. We'll have to see what it amounts to. But he was a guy on a really star-studded Orlando Scorpions team that was able, much like Hogan Windisch with the High Toms, that was able to kind of rise above and make a name for himself as well.
Yeah, it being on one of those teams is a big opportunity because, you know, we talk about the halo effect all the time in the draft and as it relates to, you know, schools in the springtime. But, you know, this summer, you know, the places where people could go scout were drawing, and, you know, Orlando was drawing, you know, Mason Black, Ryan Cusick, when they were pitching, like they were drawing scouts. And, you know, so they, if you could do it around those players and like you're talking about with Windisch, you know, if you're going to outperform Geloff and Murray and some of the other bigger name hitters on your team, like that kind of has to be noted. You know, I can write off some of the summer ball stats this summer because the competition level was very uneven. However, if you're facing the same competition as a known, you know, a more known prospect and you're outperforming them, or like Jace Young, you're performing similarly to what Matt McClain is doing, like that's very loud, and that's, you know, kind of direct comparable. Like these guys are facing pretty much the same pitching or the same hitting if you're a pitcher, and so yeah, that becomes notable. So some interesting guys to watch there. All those guys except for Yun are eligible in 21. You're going to have to wait for 22 for the next Yun brother to reach the draft process. But he's a very interesting player himself. There are some people at Texas Tech that feel like he could be, you know, as good as Josh. He's a different player, but that he could have, you know, similar impact. And that's saying a lot since Josh Yun is probably the best player in the Tim Tadlock era, you know, that has had a lot of good players. But, you know, when you just combine what he did on the field with what he meant, you know, in terms of like leadership and then how he went in the draft, like, I don't think you're going to find a better player in the Tim Tadlock era at Texas Tech. So if they can get anything close to that, I think that's outstanding news for the folks in Lubbock.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a tough needle for him to thread, I think, a little bit too, because, you know, following someone who is as successful as Josh Yun is a tough thing to do. And you're always going to have to overcome the idea that, especially when you're someone who's not, I mean, the first thing you notice about Josh Yun is like, man, this guy is big and strong. And Jace Young being a little bit of a smaller guy, I think it's easy to kind of write that off a little bit as, you know, this is just Josh's younger brother and no more than that. And so, so far so good, at least, shedding that a little bit. Quickly, you mentioned that places were fairly heavily scouted this summer, and I would agree. When I talked to the coach, the Orlando Scorpions, Bob Reichman, about their guys, and one of the things I like to ask summer ball coaches is kind of, you know, who popped for you? Who's someone who, or put better, I think this is the question they tend to like to answer more, is who's a guy who's just not getting love from the scouting community that you really stand by, that, hey, this guy could be a pro, or this guy is going to make a living or something like that. And he was like, really nobody, because we got scouted so well. And our guys were really, the scouts who came out here treated us well, and they were on the guys who, you know, I think are the guys they should be on. And I think that proves your point, that I think with there being fewer places to be, the places where there were to be were pretty well covered. And I can attest to being in the Coastal Plain and, you know, seeing the same group of scouts every single weekend. And to some degree, that's their job. But, you know, oftentimes it's not literally just the same places week after week after week.
Yeah, and I want to throw out just a few more names here of players that popped the summer on some level. Down the Florida League, Lucas Dunn, pretty known commodity, played for the collegiate national team a summer ago, but was hurt this spring, in the abbreviated spring, missed time. He went out, had an MVP season down in the Florida League, so that's good to see for Louisville and intriguing. He continues to be very intriguing as a prospect, very versatile, good hitter. We'll see where that goes for him. Brennan Malone, who played in the Southern Division in the Coastal Plain League, and so therefore Joe did not get to see, but he hit 9 home runs. Another guy that was injured early this season as in his freshman year, 18 of his 35 hits this summer were for extra bases. So, you know, again, who knows level of pitching for all of that, but like, look, if you're gonna produce 18 extra base hits in 27 games, like there's something to be said for that. Chase McDermott, Ball State right-hander, pitched in the Grand Park League there in Indianapolis, 33 strikeouts in 14 innings. Kind of similar to Malone. If you're gonna have more than two strikeouts per inning, I'll sign up for that. And then out in San Diego, Grant Holman at Cal, who has some two-way ability, but really on the mound is where he stood out this summer. He threw eight innings across five appearances, and there were no one had a hit against him all summer. He struck out 15, only walked one batter. Otherwise, it would have been, I guess, eight perfect innings for the summer. So that's pretty good, and you know that's a player that I'm very intrigued about what he can be. I don't know where he's at in terms of hitting versus pitching and all the rest of that, but if he's going to do that on the mound, that's very encouraging in terms of his potential pro upside. All right, so Joe, let's circle back here. We asked Mason about burritos because, again, he listed burrito as his favorite food. We asked Mason to describe his favorite burrito, so I think it's time for us to get real about burritos, Joe.
Yeah, we saved the important stuff for last, and thank you for hanging with us if you still made it to the burrito portion of the program. I'll just leave it at this. I'll make it brief. I'm a believer that less is more on the burrito, and I think one of the I was going to use a word like troubling, but man, that seems like an overreaction to burrito talk. One of the troubling trends in burritos. one of the things that I have not cared for, it seems like, is this creep of what can go in a burrito. And now I don't mean like the originality of putting different things in burritos, because I'm here for that. I'm just saying the inside of the burrito does not need to have eight or nine items. Like, because I think you tend to get a watered down version of whatever you're doing if you're putting eight or nine things into it. It's hard to, I get you want like kind of a symphony of flavors, but I don't know how much is too much there. The other thing is that I get really irritated when the burrito is unwieldy. If I can't keep the burrito together, like I get kind of frustrated. And yes, I can work on the stuff with a fork once it's all fallen in the bottom of the tray. I get it. And I've done that, and I will continue to do so. But I would much prefer the burrito to kind of hold together, because I think to some degree that's how the burrito is meant to be enjoyed. So I think that's what I would just say. Is now if we're going to go more specifically, I'm a chicken over other meats. Although I do love like a barbacoa from time to time, but chicken is the base, is the meat there. I'm kind of a mild salsa person. I do like there to be a little bit of wetness in there. I don't want it to be just totally dry. So I do like a salsa, but I'm a mild salsa guy because I don't want the spice to overpower kind of some of the other flavors going in. I do like guacamole in there as well. You know, black beans would be in there also. But I keep it pretty simple. I mean, tomatoes, lettuce, that's in there too, cheese. But that's kind of the maximum that I would probably do, and it kind of depends on how much of each thing is being put on there, because I may even peel back a little bit. Like lettuce is really just filler, let's be honest. So like if I'm concerned when I'm putting a burrito together and I'm watching someone put it together, if I'm concerned with the quantities of things that are going in there and the burrito's not going to hold together, like I might back off of something like tomatoes and lettuce just to simplify the burrito. If I feel like it needs filler, I can go that direction. But I feel like the salsa is going to give me the tomato for the most part. And then lettuce is just kind of filler. So I tend to be in the less is more camp when it comes to burritos, just generally.
Yeah. I used to do a weekly interview during the season with a player where I would ask them for their like Chipotle order. And, you know, we didn't ask Mason for that, but effectively he gave us that. You know, and so if I'm at a place where I'm assembling this myself, like a Chipotle or a Moe's or, you know, wherever, we're definitely going with some rice. I tend to go with the barbacoa. Not opposed to chicken, not opposed to ground beef, you know, whatever. But like if a barbacoa is available, that's probably where I'm headed. Black beans. I like the mild salsa as well. Like if I'm eating chips, I want something more, like with more bite. But like Joe mentioned, you know, in a burrito, letting it breathe a little more with the mild salsa, you can make that happen. I want some sort of corn if it's available. Sour cream, tomatoes, you know, depending on what kind of salsa we've got. If it's like a real chunky pico, maybe we don't need the tomatoes, since that's what the pico is anyway. But if it's not that for whatever reason, then maybe we need to add some tomatoes in. And then I would generally go with lettuce, and cheese is kind of a maybe not. It's definitely a game time decision situation. But yeah, also I don't want the burrito falling apart. That's not the point of the burrito. I didn't order an enchilada. I'm not, you know, if I wanted that, if I wanted to use a knife and fork, like I would order something else. Like this is a burrito. It needs to stay together. You need to wrap it well enough. I'm open to two, you know, tortillas if that's what it takes. But you know, we need to have some structural integrity when we're making a burrito.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was actually, shouting out other podcasts like crazy here lately, but Dan and Ty from the Solid Verbal, really podcasting legends at this point. They've been doing that show for such a long time. It really really deserve a lot of credit for that. But they, Dan, of course, is a big food guy, and he talks about with sandwiches the slop factor, and he sees it as a positive when there's like a certain level of sloppiness to a sandwich. And maybe occasionally with a burger, I kind of want that, but I kind of feel the same way about sandwiches and burritos where I don't want it like all the way up to my elbows. Like I want there to be a lot of varied flavors going on, but not at the expense of actually being able to eat it as it's intended, whether it's a sandwich or a burrito.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, that I don't like open face sandwiches. Like if you're going to call it a sandwich, if you're going to call it a burrito, like I need to be able to pick it up. Like that's what we're doing here. I don't want the knife and fork situation. If you want me to use a knife and fork, like that's fine. Let's just call this something else though, because, you know, a burrito, it should come in the foil and I should eat it in the foil. Like that's what we're working with here. And it's going to be a little messy. Like I understand that, but it doesn't need to be. I do not want sloppiness in terms of that. That is to its detriment, I would say.
Yeah, you don't need to abandon.
I do want to try. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, you don't need. Just one more thing on this. You don't need. My thing is, if you have to abandon the burrito or sandwich format before the last bite of the tortilla or bread, something has gone awry.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I do want to. I would like to try, you know, Mason's mother's restaurant that sounds like they have a really good breakfast burrito, which in Durham is very difficult, if not impossible, to find, which is very unfortunate. And I'm sure as a Texan yourself, Joe, that you can relate to the idea of a breakfast burrito being an outstanding dish.
100%. As you were talking there, I pulled up the menu. Now, these are not burritos, although, I mean, what is a soft taco other than a burrito that just hasn't been totally folded over? Now, different size tortillas, I get it. But
yeah, mini burrito, not quite folded, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm looking at the menu for Fuego because I remember those were, when I lived in College Station for a brief period of time, like that was my favorite place in town, and they had really, really good breakfast tacos. So it's funny you bring that up because I was looking at them here. But see, one thing I liked about Fuego, lot of variety. The tacos themselves, though, are not overdone. Like there's not too much going on. My favorite of which is Dr. Pepper Cowboy, which I will read off to you now. Smoked brisket, grilled onions, Dr. Pepper barbecue sauce, chipotle cream corn, and jack cheese in a flour tortilla. Delicious and simple. Like it doesn't need to be complicated. So yes, I'm with you. Breakfast burritos, breakfast tacos, always going to be what I choose if I'm if I'm given the option for breakfast and I'm out at some place. That's definitely kind of the thing I'm looking for.
Absolutely. There's a place in Durham that like opened during the pandemic doing burritos, but they actually aren't even open for lunch. They're exclusively a dinner situation, and we're missing a whole opportunity here with the breakfast burrito, but maybe someday, maybe someday.
Yeah. I mean, people are having to make concessions all over the place because of the pandemic, but it seems burritos and dinner. I mean, you can do it. Don't get me wrong. Like I've had Chipotle for dinner a number of times in my life or different burrito places, but it's typically a lunch type of thing. So I think that's sadly a missed opportunity. And here's hoping I'm able to experience said breakfast burritos there at some point.
Absolutely. Well, we probably need our own burrito podcast, burrito/taco podcast. Longtime listeners will know my appreciation of the genre. So we probably should wrap it up here before we continue much further down this road and turn this into a 3-hour podcast, largely about burritos. We appreciate you guys for listening to the Baseball America College podcast. Wherever you guys find your podcast, you can subscribe, be that Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. We appreciate you guys subscribing, rating, reviewing, doing all the rest of that. It helps us, it helps other people to find the podcast. So if you can take the time to do that, we ask you to do so and really appreciate all the comments and 5-star reviews you guys can leave for us. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy, BA. We will be back here with the next edition of the Baseball America College podcast next week with another guest from around college baseball, just as we've been all off season and will continue to be. So you can look forward to that and plenty of other content over at baseballamerica.com. And like I mentioned, we recently sent the September issue of the magazine out the door. So hopefully for those of you that subscribe to the magazine, you will be seeing that in your mailboxes relatively soon. Want to thank Mason Black again for joining us today here. Thank you to Joe. Thanks to Rapsodo for presenting this podcast and every Baseball America College podcast. And thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.